Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. It's a bye week edition of our show. Steve, how you doing? Did you enjoy a bye weekend?
I did. I got to see a number of other games that weren't Penn State related. It's always interesting to watch those. Happy to see Michigan lose in terms of hate watching teams. Michigan's probably closely behind Notre Dame in terms of teams I just love to turn on and watch whoever's playing them win. So that was great. And happy to be here, not outside of a hotel room. So hopefully the audio is a little better this time and not having my 15-month-old crying in the background. So.
I think we're all good this week. I had my nephew has a one-year-old daughter celebrating a first birthday. He had the good sense to schedule it during a bye week. So that's that was very good. What it meant was at least during the day, I didn't get a chance to watch all of the games. I'd sneak around, you know, pick up my phone, try and find the score. And what I found fascinating is the one time I kind of wandered off and I bumped into my nephew. It's his house. He's hosting about 40 or 50 people and he's off by himself on his phone doing exactly what I was doing, checking on the score. So I've never been so proud of him. So that was a good thing. But I think this weekend, even without Penn State playing now, in my mind, Steve, there are like different kinds of sports fans. Sometimes you're a fan of the team, not of the sport or whatever. So you and I are both fans of Penn State and Penn State football. But I'm also, and I think you are too, just a fan of college football. And I feel like this weekend just showed us how good college football is as a sport. There were so many great games on.
There are. And look, I know we had some skepticism of what this 12-team playoff was going to mean. And right now, I think it's making the games more exciting in terms of, you know, what's really on the line, who's going to make it, the seeding, home versus away. You know, there's going to be a lot of teams, I think, in this 10-2 bucket, 9-3, how this pressure sort of gets ratcheted on some of these coaches and teams earlier than maybe people think. So it makes for a very exciting season still. I know that was one of the concerns is, you know, is the regular season going to matter anymore? I think it at least does, at least for this season. In terms of watching other games, sort of watching it through the Penn State fan prism, you know, this team loses. Is that going to help or hurt Penn State's chances in trying to secure one of those? And yeah, it was a great weekend games and some upsets and sort of looking with excitement towards this big game this weekend against Wisconsin.
You know, it's interesting you put it that way because through the prism of a Penn State fan, we are now all Illinois fans because we need that to be a quality victory. As a Penn State fan, you needed to root for USC and they just plain let you down against Maryland, which I don't know what is going on there. And in light of USC losing to Maryland, you now start to question how good was that win against USC. Let me give you my thought on it first, although this doesn't really count for anything. The fact is, what have they lost now? Four games?
Three and four.
So that you can't take away from that. And when you know the committee's going to look at quality wins, they're not going to look at that as a quality win. But USC, call it what you either got awful coaching or they are just snake bit because correct me if I'm wrong, I think they may have been ahead in the fourth quarter of every single game they lost, Steve. I know what your thoughts are on James Franklin. If you were a USC fan, oh my God, you'd be ready to string up Lincoln Riley, is my thought.
Well, yeah, going back to the how good of a win was it for Penn State? I mean, coming in, including the Penn State game, I mean, you could make the argument that USC was three plays away, not each game in total, one play away in each game from being an undefeated team. They're still a talented roster. I don't understand, we talked about this heading into that week, what Lincoln Riley lacks on defense. That's something that even preceded his tenure at USC going back to Oklahoma. I don't understand how they can be that deficient on that side of the ball consistently under a coach like that. So I think the USC fans are right to have concern. But at this point, you know, they've had some bad breaks. It's probably a polite way of putting it. And I think you saw that again at Maryland. And I think at some point the team starts to doubt themselves just when they've had all these things sort of work against them. And it's not going to be the quality win that I think we're hoping it was. But I'm not going to take anything away from Penn State, though. Going out on the road, we've talked about Big Game James and his road struggles. You know, I will be definitely one that will point that out. Was happy to see them excel there. And I think the fact that Penn State was not playing their best game and was able to face some adversity and overcome it, that is a sign of a team maturing. We were questions in the season whether Aller would take that next step and be somebody you can rely upon to win a game if forced to do it. He showed he could do that. So all those things happen. You shouldn't take that away from Penn State and that being a quality win. In terms of the committee, though, analyzing what is Penn State's best win, it's clearly Illinois right now. You know, they'll have an opportunity to get potentially a great win against Ohio State, but just sort of looking ahead through the rest of the season, Illinois is probably going to be the one they're going to hang their hat on. So I don't believe West Virginia is doing nearly as well as they were hoping to do at the start of the year. So
you make a good point. And I think as a fan and having seen USC, and remember, USC has a win against LSU. That's the only loss LSU has. And if you go forward now, again, I don't want to put too much weight on this. In the Big Ten, you travel two time zones. But that was all of USC's losses, including this one against Maryland, was at Maryland. They traveled. That should not be the excuse to lose to a Maryland team. And once more, they had a field goal to lock up the game, okay? And the field goal was blocked. That would have put them up two scores. Again, you know, hey, it happened. And, you know, it starts to make me wonder on some of these teams now, and are there enough good teams and even the average or mediocre teams on any given day, a certain level of coaching could lose you a game, or lack of coaching. So that's why I look at Lincoln Riley and the fact that they've lost four games where you could point at, oh, they were one play away in every one of them. If that happens once, hey, it happens. It happens twice. By third time, we're beginning to see a trend, I think, Steve, and I want to start pointing at coaching.
Yeah, I guess where I'm sort of concerned from, again, the Penn State prism is Franklin's name was mentioned before for USC. They're going to make another run at him this time. You know, Franklin might see what's going on with Lincoln Riley and have the good sense to be like, I'm not sure I want to go out there and make that jump. I have a better thing going at Penn State. We'll see what happens in the offseason. I think you make a really good point, though, about the fact that these things continue to happen. It's the job of the coach to identify the problems and also identify solutions to them. And the fact that Riley hasn't done that, again, I think is cause for concern for Trojans fans.
And we're going to take a look at, you know, Penn State and James Franklin after a bye week and how they perform. And again, it happens once or twice. It happens. After that, you start to wonder about a trend. And it's fascinating to me also to look at this. We have the prism of the Penn State fan and looking at James Franklin. Is how many coaches now are in a position? Lincoln Riley had created this reputation at Oklahoma. USC probably felt like they hit a home run with the hire of Lincoln Riley. I think we all felt that way. Hasn't turned out that way. But you start Kalen DeBoer going from Washington to Alabama. Now, I was the one saying, look, this is a guy who took Washington to a national championship game. That has bought him so much goodwill up there. Boy, this going to Alabama, I really don't know. Well, he had a tremendous offseason, did well in the portal, did well recruiting. Everything was hunky-dory. All it took was, oh, and then he beats Georgia. Everything was fantastic. All it took, though, Steve, 1 week, one game against Vanderbilt, and his world changed. Tennessee beating him just added to it.
Absolutely. I'm wondering, though, with DeBoer, whether he knew at Washington that that was sort of a senior Latin team, that the team was probably going to take a step back. Maybe he also thought that they would struggle with the adjustment to moving to the Big Ten and all the travel that we've seen. So maybe for him, the opportunity to go to Alabama was something that may not necessarily resurface at some point. And so that was sort of his decision to leave. That's sort of how these coaches, they have to think about what's in their best situation and understand, you know, are they leaving at a time where they think the roster is going to improve? Or you know, just saying, hey, this roster is really going to take a step back this year. I should get out now while I can. And I sort of think about that with Kotelniki. You know, what are going to be the offers, you know, to him at the end of the season? And sort of what does he view Penn State in terms of the roster and how much depth there? I mean, is there a chance that he could get Aller to come back next year? Maybe stick around and try to do something? We don't know.
No.
You don't think? I'm just saying. So, but then it's like, maybe how is the progression of Prabula, or maybe a quarterback that maybe isn't Prabula, is that going to weigh in his decision to come back? You know, I don't know. Are both Singleton and Allen going to leave? I mean, obviously Tyler Warren's going to go. You know, if the fact that he's doing a lot of things now, are they going to attract some talent there in the portal at the wide receiver position? You know, we'll see. I'm just, you know, you got to play with the cards you're dealt and really just focus on this season and try to enjoy it. Do I think maybe Franklin can get Lincoln Riley as the offense coordinator next year? If not sure that's in the cards either, but one can dream.
You know, I never thought of that, but it kind of follows the trend that he's been doing, which is hire these head coaches who've been fired. Now, Kotelniki didn't fit that, but he's been good at bringing in these high profile guys. But, you know, talking about DeBoer, at Washington, I think when you do what he did there, again, get them to a national championship game, you bought yourself so much goodwill that he could go through a rebuild and he'll be fine. You go to Alabama, that goodwill that you created with Washington does not carry over for you, though, Steve. Now, he got paid a lot of money. But I would think he was being paid a pretty good penny at Washington, too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure he's going to regret his decision. These guys never do. But, you know, we'll see how he can adjust moving forward. And I wouldn't, you know, rule out Alabama. There's still a lot of talent on that roster. And he's a pretty good coach. We'll see whether they can sort of right the ship here down the road. But there's definitely a lot of pressure. And you look at their coordinators, you know, there is a question of how many cooks in the kitchen do you have there? And that's definitely something that maybe – something he didn't have to deal with at Washington, manage a lot of those egos and the process and the like.
Exactly. There's a lot. It's a lot different job at Alabama than it was at Washington. All right. That's it for quarter number one. We got lots more to go. We're going to talk about Wisconsin next. Stay tuned. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. We are talking Penn State football. And Steve, we got a game coming up this weekend. It's at Wisconsin. And this is kind of the question I think we could have about so many teams in the country. We talk quite a bit about USC in the first segment, and how big a quality win was it for Penn State to beat USC? And you know what? As someone said, your record is your record. You know, you are what your record says you are, and USC is a four-loss team. No matter how you slice it, dice it, it's a win over a four-loss team, so it's not that impressive. What's more concerning now is going forward, Penn State is going to be at Wisconsin this coming week. Now, this is a Wisconsin team that's 5-2 overall, 3-1 in the conference. And let's start with, you know, our conversation about the 12-team playoff. If you're Wisconsin, you say to yourself, hey, we only have one loss in the conference. Everything's still in front of us. We could still win the Big Ten, right?
In theory, I'm sure Fickell's using that to motivate his team. I think Fickell's a pretty good coach. Look at those two losses. Got embarrassed, I would say, by Alabama, which may not have been surprising. I know they were dealing with the back quarterback situation. The game I actually watched them play the most was when they lost to USC out there. Wisconsin actually was playing pretty well most of the game. And then there was a muff punt that sort of changed the momentum there later. Franklin has done a pretty good job against Wisconsin matching up. I'll give him credit there. I'm concerned. You could tell me more about his record off the bye week. I mean, I think it comes at an opportune time, hoping that some of these guys are a little banged up. They can get healed. The logistics of having to travel back from Los Angeles and maybe get a little settled, get these guys healthy, hopefully clean up some things like we talked about last week with respect to tackling, maybe some assignments there on the passing side. And then be prepared for a very raucous night environment, which at this point, you know, they should be ready to step up and I think be prepared just because they've had good wins in West Virginia, even USC. These aren't the easiest places to play. So I'm hopeful. But again, you tell me sort of how Franklin's record is off the bye week, because I guess I don't always remember it as being that stellar, but I do have sort of a certain view of Franklin. So maybe my perception's off.
All right. I have it going back the last 10 years. I have them after a bye losing 6 losses off a bye over the last 10 years and only 4 wins. Now, I think we can get the 10 games is a pretty large sample.
Well, who were they playing? I mean, they might have had some decent opponents there, too. I'll give them some chance to defend themselves there.
Well, here's where I think we've got to understand, like, when they lost, the other factor that comes into play that I've seen a common thread through this is they often somehow, maybe just by coincidence, the bye week comes after their first loss of the season. And it feels like they didn't recover from the loss. So the lost in 2018 to Michigan State came after they had lost a tough game to Ohio State prior. And I think that may have been the game that was interrupted. They lost to in 2022, they lost to Michigan, but that was a Michigan team that won the conference, went undefeated. They lost in 21. That was the Illinois game that was ugly, ugly, ugly. But that came after that really tough loss at Iowa where Sean Clifford got hurt, you know. So that's why I'm saying I think that there's been multiple times when the loss has come after they lost the game that – disappointed them. They lost a huge game. And even with the bye, there seems to be a hangover from it. Two of the losses came in those 7-6 seasons when he first got here. So my tendency is to cross those off. Okay. So I don't know, Steve, if I'm rationalizing it, if I've justified them at all. I still feel like it's not a stellar performance after a bye. Let's put it that way.
No, but if you want to go back to how consequential was it USC win, it sounds like it was in terms of nothing else psychologically to not have team beat you twice. So have some positive momentum, something to still play for going into the bye week, I think is really important here. Most coaches, in terms of making adjustments and things, usually I think show that side of their skill set during the bye week. That's something that I've always questioned in terms of Franklin's skill set, is something that he probably lacks compared to other coaches that I would rank above him. So there may be something to that, but you have your whole season to play for. You had a bye week to get healthy, and there's no reason for the team not to be prepared. But my concern is that the way I sort of remember coming out of these bye weeks is the team often comes out slow and flat. And that's still been something that has been a concern pretty much this whole season. And I don't think they really want to start off that way going to Wisconsin. Go in there, handle your business, get a good win, and then get out, be prepared for Ohio State the following week. I mean, that's the goal. I'm curious to see Nick Singleton in terms of his health. There's been some conflicting reports, whether he had an illness, whether it's something that lingered and that may have contributed to maybe lack of production in the eyes of some against USC. I'm not concerned about the run game. I know that's something that's going around a lot of message boards. I mean, UCLA, Singleton didn't play, and it's not the same just relying on Catron Allen the whole time. With USC, they were down 14 points for most of the first half. You were trying to throw to come back. I think it's there if you need it. I also think at this point, a lot of teams, at the beginning of the season, we were talking about them playing the safeties deep to take away the deep threat of the pass. Now you seem to adjust to try to play up and take away the run. And that's why I'm encouraged that Aller was able to show that if you do that, Penn State's going to be effective in finding ways to beat you with the pass. So that should open up other avenues for other people. What I'm curious to see, too, with Warren having such a dominant performance against USC, is Wisconsin going to focus on him? If they do that at the expense of moving a safety over, is that going to create opportunities for people elsewhere in the passing game or maybe the run game? You know, will Kotelniki use Warren now as more of a decoy, or is he going to try to save that for Ohio State? I don't know, but that's something to keep an eye on moving forward.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that, but just one final note on the bye week performance, because I think it's worth noting. Four times out of the 10, out of the bye week, they played Michigan, and another time they played Ohio State. So the quality of opponent has to be factored into this. But the other thought is back-to-back years in 2016 and 17 after the bye. In 2016, it was the big win against Ohio State. In 2017, coming off a bye, they beat Michigan 42-13.
I was at that game. That might have been one of my most pleasant experiences in recent Penn State history.
Yeah, and those are the games that you wonder, were you happier about Penn State winning or happier about Michigan getting their butt kicked?
That's a good internal conversation to have on a long drive home. That's a lot more enjoyable.
And I will take that conversation anytime, right? Well, yeah, let's get back to, you brought up Tyler Warren, and I think it was like a performance for the ages against USC. And it makes me, you know, I was told prior to Andy Kotelniki getting here that he's the kind of guy who he will take what is given to him, given to his offense, that don't think of him as a passing game guru, that's what you're going to see, or you're going to see them run the ball. He'll do what works. And if anything, that is what I think is my takeaway from Andy Kotelniki through the first half of the season. And remember, first game West Virginia was Trey Wallace. Then it was Tyler Warren. Then Tyler Warren again against USC. And then there were games where they just leaned on the running game. And Drew Aller barely broke 20 passes in those games. So it does feel like Andy Kotelniki will adapt to what's being given to him.
Well, we talked about coaches being opportunistic and selective about their career opportunities. And I think Kotelniki saw something at Penn State, which is coming through now, is it's a balanced offense, which you have a lot of different tools that you can use. So if one team's trying to take away one thing versus another, you have those at your disposal, not trying to force a square peg in a round hole like some coaches do, where it's like, okay, if you want to sell out on the run, we're going to hit you deep in the pass. If you're going to try to do the run and take away the deep ball, we have a guy named Tyler Warren who's going to eat you alive, particularly if you're going to continue to stay in that zone and his linebackers are going to cheat up because if you're the run threat. There is a lot of threat there. I mean, if there's one relative weakness, I would say on the offense, the wide receivers, I think at this point are still – I would say average plus. They have an opportunity to prove me wrong. I hope they do. But if you look at really consistent play now, I think at the quarterback position, the running backs, and obviously Tyler Warren is somebody who's very special. And the offensive line has been a relative improvement compared to what we had in prior seasons too. You talked earlier about 16 and 17. Those were some memorable teams. That offensive line wasn't great. And look, this may offend some people. I think Aller has much more quarterback potential than Trace McSorley did. So the receivers may not be where they were compared to the 16, 17 teams. I think even Warren may be an improvement from Gesicki, who is obviously very good. And it's tough to take anybody over Saquon, but the fact that you have two guys in Singleton and Allen, I think, is something special as well. So give credit to Kotelnicki for identifying this balanced team and being creative and smart enough to figure out what's working and what's not and do it effectively in the games.
And, you know, we'll talk about it more, but it feels like the game against USC, it finally was, okay, we need Drew Aller to come through for us in this game. He has to throw over 40 passes in this game. And guess what? It works, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, last season he at times may have just been the body language, which we often maybe read too much into, but he seemed very much a guy who was starting for the first time. And almost a deer in the headlights. And I think what we saw in USC was a coming out, a maturation. Aller saying, this is my team. I'm going to lead you to victory. I'm happy to put it on my shoulders. He hadn't really been asked to do that. And we hadn't really seen that before. But that's my hope heading into these more difficult games, potentially against Wisconsin, definitely Ohio State, is can Aller do that? If we're fortunate enough to make the playoffs, that's probably what's going to be asked to do moving forward.
I agree with you, and we'll pick that up when we get back. But I saw in him in this USC game that maybe he already had the confidence. Maybe the coaching staff already had the confidence in him. That was him showing it to the rest of the world. Now I think everybody else, including defenses, know. We'll pick up that conversation when we get back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Steve, I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State. And Steve, when we finished up quarter number two, we were talking about Drew Aller and the differences between last year Drew Aller and this year Drew Aller. And what's interesting is, I think, and I'm saying it too, this was the first game that they said, look, it's on his shoulders, up to him to perform. But with that said, I've pointed out earlier in the season when the end of the first half, the game, you have to go 75 yards and there's 2 minutes left in the half. You're not going to march down the field, you know, a 15-play drive running the ball. You have to put it in Drew Aller's hands. And what does he do? He just drives the team right down the field, completes 6 out of 7 passes for over 70 yards, touchdown. And that, to me, it showed me that Drew Aller has that ability. And it was in, you know, small chunks. But come this USC game, they needed it for longer stretches. They needed it for the whole game, and they needed him to throw over 40 passes, and he came through. I think that's a huge difference between this year's team and the last couple of years, Steve.
Absolutely. I'm going to go back to Bowling Green. I mean, the defense was struggling in that first half to stop them. That was on Aller to keep them in the game, and he kept delivering. I know that was against lesser competition, but still, there was some early pressure there. But to come out and do that against USC – just everything compared to last year is exactly what you'd want to see in terms of maturation and hope if you're a fan. What I'll say about last season is I don't know what the coaching philosophy was. You had a very special defense last year. This defense has the opportunity to be good. I don't think they're at the same level as last year's unit was. So I don't know if there was sort of more of a mindset to be conservative, how much of that was Yursich, how much of that was just Aller being a first-year starter. There's been a lot of talk last year about his reluctance to throw any interceptions. Hopefully now he's been able to work by that. And I go back to the USC game. The fact that he threw two I would say bad interceptions. That can rattle a lot of quarterbacks in terms of their confidence. It didn't for Aller. He played his best football after that. Those fourth down throws, you're not going to find more pressure and building on somebody in terms of their ability to really execute at that critical moment than that. The fact that he continued to do that on that final drive, there's a lot of reason for optimism. I just hope that, you know, he stays healthy. One criticism I'll have for him, I don't know if this is being directed by the coaches, but you bring it up a lot, is keep the ball, run it. I think there's more there. I like when he's making the decisions about when the play's not there, him sort of scrambling, but still the design sort of they appear to be designed runs where the quarterback has the option to keep, and he's still been doing that. I don't know if he's just sort of holding that back for Ohio State. Maybe he has to do that against Wisconsin. It seems like it's there. Maybe we'll see that at some point, but that'd be one thing that I would just say, you know, it's there. Maybe they're telling him not to take it until they feel that they really need it. But that's all I'm criticizing him for. I think that's a pretty good position to be in.
It is. And you're right. That has been one of my pet peeves. It's not been nearly as upsetting to me this year as it was last year, because I think those plays do happen, but I don't think they've been as often or as prevalent. So when you're running those same plays so many times last year and every single time giving it to the running back, you know, to me that gives the defense an advantage. It doesn't feel like that is happening quite as often. The other part to it for this season is Drew Aller seems to be so much quicker with his decision making on whether to move or not, move out of the pocket and run, or simply move out of the pocket and then buy time and throw the ball. He seems so much more decisive. And I know I brought this up on one or two of the shows last week. What I think the two fourth down plays, Steve, the first one, it was Julian Fleming making a great catch on it. You know, Drew Aller made the throw, but to me, that play was about Julian Fleming. The second one, the fourth and 10 to Julian Fleming, I think it was not so much just on the pass, but Drew Aller had to avoid the rush to make the pass, to get himself, make himself available for it. And again, he looked like there was zero hesitation. He knew exactly what he had to do, and he did it quickly. There was no hesitation, Steve.
His movement in the pocket, not the scrambling, I'm talking about just being elusive enough to buy yourself that extra second or two, makes all the difference in the world. And that's a sign of progression that we've seen from last year. It's very encouraging. We're going to find out a little bit more about this offensive line, which has played very well, particularly on a relative basis compared to what offensive lines have been recently. Giving Drew Aller an extra second or two can make all the difference in the world. Wisconsin has a pretty good defensive front, and Ohio State has an even better defensive front. I think that was sort of the knock recently with Penn State offense has been, but what about Michigan and Ohio State when you're going up against them? Not going up against Michigan this year, which may be disappointing, even though that they are. Probably wish they were, to be honest. But Iowa State in a couple of weeks, we're definitely going to find out. And I think Wisconsin will be probably an early test to that, too.
And Wisconsin has played well the last 3 weeks. Just, again, the competition hasn't been the greatest. But their last three games, 52-6 against Purdue, 42-7 at Rutgers, and 23-3 at Northwestern. So the last three opponents have not hit double figures in scoring. So Wisconsin, one of the things, and we'll talk about this a little more in the fourth quarter because I want to look at the national picture, Steve, but I think mistake we often make is team they win, lose their first game, and we pass judgment on them. Wisconsin got schooled by Alabama early. Hey, we thought that tells us all we need to know about Wisconsin. Well, not necessarily. It was the same thing. Clemson got schooled by Georgia and has been unstoppable since. You can't judge a team too quickly.
I think in the case of Wisconsin, the fact that their starting quarterback went down early in the season, a lot of people just wrote them off. And I think to your point, now you're seeing more the maturation of their backup quarterback. Fickle's a good coach. Luke Fickell. I mean, he did well with Cincinnati. He did more with less there. I think that he's a pretty good guy, and I think teams sometimes can sort of find their stride later in the season. This is going to be a tough game.
It is, and the fact that it's at night, we alluded to this a little bit earlier, that it's going to be a big-time crowd at Wisconsin. You and I were talking a little bit about what the spread will be. It was interesting because we're recording on Sunday. Yesterday, I saw an early spread where it was like 10.5 points, and I looked it up before we started recording, and there were still a couple services that had it at 10.5 points, but there were a couple other that came out with it at 6.5 points. That's a big difference of 4 points, which I think tells you, Steve, that a lot of people aren't sure what we're going to get for this game.
No, I mean, you have a new team, I would say, now with Wisconsin from where they started. The new quarterback. It's also a different Wisconsin era under Fickell in terms of it's not just the old ground and pound regime that we saw for so many years. It's much more balanced. Defensively, I don't know how different they are, but I do know, you know, offensively they're going to throw the ball more. And you know, I think we saw with USC, one of the concerns, particularly still in the first half, is this pass defense at times can be suspect, particularly when they're in the zone and some of these early crossing routes. So I'm hoping that will be something that maybe we'll see some improvement coming out of the bye week. But if not, it could be a long day.
Why do you think Penn State starts so slow so often, especially on defense?
I have no explanation for that. I really don't. I mean, you go in all week, you have all this film to prepare. I could see maybe one or two games where a team catches you by surprise. To have it happen at this point, 6 games into the season, I really don't have an explanation for that.
Yeah, and you're not that Wisconsin is Ohio State. They're not. But Ohio State is coming up. This is Wisconsin, and we all know what a night game can be like, okay, and helpful for the home team, especially if Wisconsin or Penn State were to start slow, hence Wisconsin starting quick, the crowd will start being a much bigger factor in the game.
They will. And then hopefully looking ahead to Ohio State with a positive outcome here, the fact that it's a night game, you almost lose a day of preparation. If you play a big noon game, you can still get home at a relative reasonable hour on Saturday and utilize Sunday. When you play these evening games, you get home so early Sunday morning, that's sort of a lost day. And again, you've had a bye week now. Presumably, they've been looking ahead somewhat to Ohio State, I think, maybe coming back to Wisconsin for more of the traditional game week flow. But it's not something that's, I think, insignificant.
No, it's not. It's all part of it. And then, you know, you got to think now about the Penn State strategy in every game going in. When you're coming off a game where Tyler Warren, like I said, has an otherworldly type game, you know, 17 catches, over 200 yards. If you're Wisconsin, do you do what USC apparently did not do, which is identify where number 44 is on every single play and just make sure he doesn't beat you?
Well, he's a matchup problem because of his height, his jumping ability, his speed. I mean, who are you going to put on him? Running linebackers are going to have a difficult time just keeping pace with him. Corners are going to have a difficult time because of the size matchup. And then if you start putting, okay, we're going to have a corner and a safety over him, then you're going to probably leave some wide receiver, at least with single coverage. And Penn State has guys with Wallace in particular. And I'm trying to think, number 5, whose name's escaping me at the
moment. Omari Evans.
Yes, that can definitely run by. And Aller has the arm to get it there. So sort of pick your poison. And that's what I'm curious to see. Is Wisconsin going to overcompensate for Warren? Is Kotelnicki going to assume that and design some plays to take advantage of that? And what do you want to put on tape heading into Ohio State?
When we come back, we're going to be talking about the whole playoff situation because it's really fascinating. But in the minute we have left, Steve, give me your prediction for the Wisconsin game.
I'm going to be optimistic and go against all my instincts and say Penn State 35, Wisconsin 24.
Wow. And, you know, it's interesting you call it against all your instincts. You can't help yourself, can you? It's not Penn State that struggles after a bye week. It's James Franklin who struggles, right?
It's an emotional hedge. I'm either right or I'm happy they won.
Well, whatever gets you through the night, Steve, that's helpful. But I do know it is a big game for Penn State. And after such an emotional win against USC, yes, the bye week, I think, came at a great time. But this is still a test for James Franklin coming off the bye. I'm conceding that also. We have enough history on that. All right, we look at the playoff situation when we come back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Steve. I'm Jim. We're talking all things Penn State football, and Penn State is part of the playoff conversation. They've worked their way up the rankings, Steve, but this new playoff system has changed everything, how we watch college football. There would be a time when, with four teams making the playoffs, there was really only a handful of games that meant anything as far as the national championship went. Now, there are so many more games that mean something. I just wanted to go over with you what the playoff situation looks like and where you think we're headed. And I want to do that with the two big conferences, the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference. There's an argument that the Big 12 and ACC, they may only get one team in. Maybe one of them will get a second team in. That's questionable. But when you go Big Ten, you go Southeast Conference, you got numerous teams. Let's start with the Big Ten. Oregon's unbeaten. Penn State's unbeaten. Ohio State with the one loss to Oregon. Indiana. Yes, Indiana. Unbeaten. And I don't know if we count Wisconsin in there because they just have one Big Ten loss. But make sense of it for me, Steve. Indiana, Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State.
Illinois only has one loss, too, to Penn State, right?
Actually, yes, they do.
So I just wanted to point them out.
Maybe even more so than Wisconsin.
Yeah, so you sort of look at, you know, who has difficult games remaining on their schedule. I think Indiana has to play Ohio State at some point. I think their schedule is going to get a little harder moving forward. Cignetti's a good coach for Indiana, by the way. Franklin leaves, that's definitely somebody you might want to circle in terms of keeping an eye on there. In terms of just going down the schedule, though, I mean, or the rankings, you clearly have, I would say at this point, three teams that I would put above the rest, and that is Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State. Not necessarily in that order. But if you're looking at the Big Ten, probably getting at least three teams in, optimistic that those would be the three, if sort of the season plays out as we think it will. That is also why the margin for error for Penn State, can't afford to lose with Wisconsin. You can't afford, if you lose to Ohio State, lose another game, just because that's going to leave a lot more of this to chance. I guess my question for you as to how this works with the committee is how much wiggle room they have for some of those teams. Does it have to be the highest ranked teams in terms of what they're going to select? Or do they have potential to maybe select some teams or use the committee selecting the determining the rankings? Maybe that's where we'll see some difference from the AP and the coaches poll.
Well, that's what's going to be interesting, to see how the committee does rank. And I should have included Illinois, but I kind of played out or spelled out the rest of the schedule for those teams. Illinois plays Oregon this coming week at Oregon. How do you feel about that game? I think odds makers make Oregon like a 20-point favorite for this against Illinois. I think this would probably be, unfortunately for Illinois, the reputation, you know, where they start in the pecking order, a loss to Oregon would probably be an elimination game for Illinois.
Well, it goes back to, what are your two losses? If they only have two losses to Penn State and Oregon, I mean, they're sort of up there. That's assuming that Penn State does pretty well. That would be a good argument for maybe getting that fourth spot if the Big Ten is going to get a fourth spot, if they were able to win the rest of their games. It also depends on how much you lose by, going back to the spread. If you get the doors blown off against Oregon, people may look at that and say, well, look, you played a legitimate playoff team here and you weren't competitive. So why would we give that playoff spot to somebody who's just going to not be competitive in the playoff? That doesn't make a lot of sense if I'm on the committee. And I would apply probably the same logic to Indiana and other teams.
Well, let me give you Indiana's schedule. Remember, the difference is they are undefeated. Illinois has a loss. Indiana, the three games I listed as, you know, still challenges, they have Washington at home, Michigan at home, and at Ohio State. How do you see those three games playing out for Indiana?
I think they're definitely going to lose to Ohio State. Michigan probably looks beatable now. I think that team's sort of getting away from Sherrod Moore, and they may start to quit on themselves. So if they go into Ohio State undefeated, it'll go back to how did they lose. I think to your point, though, if they're a one-loss Indiana team, I assume they end the year with Purdue, which should be a win. And that's sort of their regional rival there. At that point, it would be tough to keep them out if they have one loss compared to another two-loss team potentially.
Yeah, that's what, you know, Indiana – I think is a legitimate playoff contender. It will come down to, if we're going to assume they're going to lose at Ohio State, they have Washington and Michigan. If they could win those two, they're an 11-1 Indiana. That's a playoff team.
It is, if it's 11-1, and they could beat those teams. The odds that they're going to beat all both of them, that's probably not that great. And those are going to be tough games for Indiana. We just talked about some of the talent disparity there, too.
Now, they have them both at home, though.
Which helps.
And by the way, I thought Nebraska was going to beat them, too.
Yeah, we talked earlier in the season about Matt Rhule maybe being a contender to come back to Penn State. He's somebody I've always kept an eye on, probably looking like less of a good option right now, being put to admit that. Still early, though. Nebraska has time to come around. Cignetti, this is his first year in Indiana. And they're doing a lot better without Tom Allen, so draw your own conclusion there. But I think the point is, though, I think we have to be rooting for Indiana to get a second loss, because I like Penn State's odds. If for some reason they trip up and a two-loss Penn State team against a two-loss Indiana team, my guess is that the committee will look at the talent that Penn State has in its roster as to say, okay, who is going to be the more competitive game? They want a good product, particularly in this expanded playoff field the first go around, and then just the eyes too, just the ratings and everything else. I think that's sort of the intangibles that probably work to Penn State's benefit if it's going to come down to what's going on in those smoke-filled rooms there in the committee where you're trying to debate who is it going to be. The best thing you can do if you're Penn State just win out. That would be great. If you assume a loss to Ohio State, and it may arguably be better to not play in the Big Ten championship, get another bye, and get a home playoff game. And that's sort of another way to look at it, too. So that may potentially come into play here. But I think of the teams that you mentioned, Indiana, because of their remaining record, is probably the one that's in most competition for Penn State, potentially for a playoff spot.
If it plays out the way I think most of us would bet on it if we had to, Ohio State has the loss to Oregon. If they went out and they have Nebraska at home, at Penn State, Indiana at home, and at Michigan, I think we think in Ohio State will win out and have one loss.
They would be in the Big Ten championship, yes, similar against Oregon.
Yes, because if they beat Penn State and that's Penn State's only loss, Ohio State gets in for that head-to-head win, and they would also – Indiana has one loss, but Ohio State would be beating Indiana also. So you could have an undefeated Oregon and a one-loss Penn State, a one-loss Ohio State, and a one-loss Indiana. So that's four teams with either undefeated or one loss. I think all four of those teams make it in. Now, the interesting thing is I did a similar thing with the Southeast Conference, extending their schedule and who the top teams play. And I ended up with six teams out of the Southeast Conference having two losses or fewer, Steve. And by the way, I have Alabama losing a third game.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely could see Alabama losing a third game too. What were the teams you had? I assume you had Georgia, you had Texas. Who were the others that you had in there?
I had Texas A&M plays LSU at home and Texas on the road. Well, they have LSU and Texas. I have them losing to Texas, which gives them total of two losses, but one conference loss. I have LSU splitting against losing to Texas A&M and beating Alabama at home. Now that, you know, if Alabama wins that game against LSU, they only have two losses and LSU has a third, you know, so it's one or the other.
Well, LSU has now what we consider a bad loss, going back to our USC discussion too. So I think that's the type of stuff that's going to come back around here, where the teams will be politicking to the committee to try to make their case as to why they should make it in. But you're talking about, I would say 4-4 is probably where it should end up between the SEC and the Big Ten. So that you talk about those remaining four slots, who would they go to? And that's when I worry about Notre Dame, which is why I'm going to be rooting extra hard for USC that last week to kick them out, because they have a ridiculously soft schedule. They end up competing for the Commander in Chief's trophy by playing all the service academies again soon, I think, or at least Army and Navy. It'd be great to see one of them knock Notre Dame off, if not both, to be honest.
It would be fun. I think I look at it that, remember, you have the ACC, the Big 12 winner, and the Group of Five, and potentially Notre Dame. So you'll get either 8 or 9 teams from the Big Ten and Southeast Conference. And, you know, if I think the Big Ten would be limited to 4 teams. The Southeast Conference, you know, I think they're going to end up with their tiebreakers against each other. You know, it's like, which 2-loss team? Because I have, you know, Georgia.
But which network is carrying the playoffs? Is it ESPN?
So you're thinking that would play into it?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, and they have the SEC contract, so are they going to get a 5th team? Like, I live in D.C., so I'm familiar with conspiracies. So that wouldn't surprise me if that's how this thing shakes out, assuming Notre Dame gets a second loss.
If Notre Dame gets a second loss and you then have one from ACC, one from Big 12, and one from Group of Five, and it's 9 teams. Yeah, in my mind, it's 5 from the Southeast Conference, 4 from the Big Ten. But I could also see between Notre Dame and potentially like a second ACC team, if you have – I don't believe Clemson plays Miami, so they could meet in the conference championship game. And if Clemson beats Miami – you have a 1-loss Clemson and a 1-loss Miami in the ACC.
Potentially. I mean, I think most people, myself included, maybe I should say it's my opinion, but I think many people share this, that Miami's a fraud. They continue to get lucky every week against very what I would consider the most stellar competition. At some point, it seems like their luck's going to run out, but we'll see.
But Miami has left let's see. Florida State, Duke, Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, and Syracuse.
So maybe their luck won't run out.
All right, that's going to be the final word. Thanks, Steve, and thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy cafe tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.